welcome and thank you for joining us for another episode of KPMG's Inside International Tax, a podcast devoted to recent developments, observations, and trends related to U.S. international tax. I'm one of your hosts, Kristen Gamboa, a managing director in KPMG's WNT International Tax Practice. I'm joined by my co-host, Gary Scanlon, a principal in the same group. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Kristen. Great to be here.
So recent changes to the U.S. and global tax landscape have led foreign-parented multinationals to take a fresh look at inbounding into the United States. U.S. tax changes and the recently announced Pillar 2 side-by-side system have, to some, made the U.S. more attractive from a tax perspective, while to others, these developments have only leveled the tax playing field. In any case, as will be made clear from today's conversation, non-tax factors may end up playing a decisive role in the decision of whether to re-domesticate into the U.S. or to stay abroad. In today's episode, we'll discuss the potential drivers and potential drawbacks to inbounding into the United States. For our discussion today, we're joined by Gordon Warnke, a principal in charge of the Complex Transactions Group and co-principal in charge of the WNT M&A Tax Practice. And we're also joined by Steve Massett, also a principal in the same group. Thanks for joining us, Gordon and Steve.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
So to set the stage for our listeners, Steve, what do we mean when we talk about inbounding?
Big picture, I think there are really two types of inbounding transactions. The first one, and the one that generally comes to mind when discussing the topic, is placing a U.S. corporation on top of a foreign parent group. Now, this can be done on a standalone basis or through a combination with an existing U.S. parent group, and can be accomplished through a stock acquisition, for example, a reverse subsidiary merger, or an asset acquisition, you know, merger of the foreign parent into a U.S. company. And although similar in result, the form of these inbounding transactions can materially change the tax considerations for the foreign target companies, shareholders, and the U.S. acquiring corporation. The second type of inbounding transaction, Gary, is when a foreign parent group transfers assets or operations to the U.S., but doesn't re-domicile the parent of the group. This type of inbounding allows the foreign parent group to take advantage of some of the taxpayer favorable aspects of the U.S. tax regime without having to go through the complexity of moving the entire group under the U.S. tax net.
In the past, particularly pre-TCJA, the inversion conversation usually centered around the benefits and the pitfalls, including under Section 7874, of U.S. multinationals leaving the U.S. Gordon, what's changed from a tax perspective, and what's driving this conversation about the potential to inbound?
I think they're obviously two separate questions. We're going to talk a little bit more about the non-tax aspects here shortly, which I think are really the driver. But what's happened, so unlike with inversions from U.S. companies inverting out of the U.S., which I think was significantly driven by the tax benefits, in today's world, looking at inbounding, it's not so much that the tax benefits are driving the inbounding, but you're now in a world in which the tax drag is such that being in the United States is no longer the hindrance it once was. Indeed, as you know, before TCJA, nobody was talking about foreign companies that I'm aware of, foreign companies coming into the United States. But as a result of TCJA and some more recent developments, which I'll mention in a second, when you actually run the modeling, and by the way, modeling is key. Until you actually run the modeling, you don't know. But when you run the modeling, you'll find that in a lot of cases, the tax drag for being in the U.S. is greatly reduced, and in some cases, it can actually be beneficial. And so that's what you got to run when you look at it. When you look at OB3 and the changes that happened in OB3, including the changes to what was then GILTI, let other people argue about what they're called in GILTI's world, whether it's necktie or NICTI or however you want to pronounce it. But those changes, including expense allocation, you look at what's happening with the U.S. R&D credit, the favorable developments there, expensing, you look at side-by-side with respect to Pillar 2, and you take those all into account. And depending on your fact pattern, you can have, as I already said, very little leakage, and in some cases, an actual net positive. And indeed, as Steve already mentioned, once you inbound, you can also look at doing other reorganizing to give you even greater efficiencies. It's not so much to me that the inbounding is being driven by the tax benefits, but the tax benefits have now made it much more favorable to inbound.
Thanks, Gordon. So I think you previewed this question a bit in your answer, Gordon, but Steve, do you think these changes make the U.S. a more attractive jurisdiction than other countries, or just level the playing field? In particular, are there any drawbacks to these changes?
I agree with Gordon. I think it all depends on how you look at the question, right? The changes make the U.S. a more attractive jurisdiction than it has in the past, but vis-a-vis other jurisdictions, these changes are more properly viewed as just leveling the playing field. You know, indeed, I think these changes, you know, have removed a lot of the historical tax friction, which Gordon walked through, that's been associated with moving to the U.S., making tax less of a consideration in determining where a multinational group decides to locate its parent company. With that said, the U.S. tax system certainly isn't Shangri-La. For example, even though the new side-by-side system, U.S. multinationals are still subject to QDMTTs on top of the U.S. CFC regime, CAMT, BEAT, not to mention the complex U.S. tax reporting rules.
It's worth mentioning that Pillar 2 was just going to be a minimum tax on top of the U.S. already has three minimum taxes, GILTI, CAMT, BEAT. So it's maybe one less minimum tax, but as you know, even that, the QDMTT is going to continue to apply to most of a U.S.'s foreign CFCs anyway. So questionable what type of benefit there is.
I think it's very dependent on your facts. That's why modeling is key. For some people, it may be a significant benefit, depending, you know, if you're in low tax jurisdiction and a high tax jurisdiction, you're able to cross credit. For other people, it may be less of a benefit or negative, but it's certainly not the negative it once was.
I agree.
So we talked a lot about the tax considerations, and obviously we've stated that the playing field has been leveled, at least with respect to tax considerations themselves, but what about non-tax considerations? Gordon, are there any potential non-tax drivers to inbounding?
Funny, when I first started looking at this probably over a year ago now, I was starting to see interest in this area and started to talk to investment banks about it. And that's continued to this day. I'm not aware of a case yet where somebody's looking at inbounding solely for the tax benefits. And the driver is normally a perceived or actual. And when you take a look at the stats, you can get significantly higher trading multiples if you're listed in the United States. And obviously have a lot greater access to capital in the U.S. than any other place in the world. And those two drivers are pretty significant drivers. Now, you can list in the United States without having to have a U.S. topco. And indeed, there's been significant action in that area over the last year with more and more companies looking at listing in the United States. But I'm told that it's easier to be in certain indexes, such as the S&P 500, if you have a U.S. topco as your parent company. Doesn't mean you can't be in that index without it, but it is easier to do so. And I think that is one of the drivers why a lot of people are looking at U.S. topcos as a possibility. I mean, there's a number of the drivers. You may already have your executives may be in the United States. You may have other connections with the United States as to why you want to have a U.S. topco. But certainly being able to be included in an index more easily than if you're not U.S. parented, I think, is a significant driver.
Help clients go into these dual listed structures from a U.S. listing standpoint where you have your shares traded on both the U.S. and a foreign exchange at the same time and you're not going through an expensive ADR program anymore. One thing to keep in mind on that point is just making sure that you're ticking and tying treaty qualification and making sure that being dual listed and maybe primarily traded or regularly traded in one jurisdiction versus the other doesn't adversely affect any treaty position that you would otherwise be taking. Some other non-tax drivers to really consider on the inbound. You know, some of these are really fact dependent, right? There are potentially a number of drivers depending on taxpayer's specific situation. You could think about potentially a less burdensome regulatory environment, maybe increased flexibility to structure management compensation, and potentially to reorganize your supply chain.
Thanks, Steve. We've discussed the potential benefits of inbounding, but what are some of the costs associated with inbounding from a tax perspective?
Several, and the extent to which the cost is prohibitive or determinative is going to depend in not insignificant part, and may also depend on your shareholder base. To the extent that you've got U.S. shareholders, and most of the companies that are inbound are going to have U.S. shareholders that are publicly traded, they're going to have at least some U.S. shareholders. Depending how the transaction is structured, there may be that it's taxable to the U.S. shareholders on coming into the U.S. And indeed, one thing I've been looking at is doing transactions where it's taxable to the shareholders, but also taxable in a way that allows me to then step up the basis coming into the United States by making an election to have the basis stepped up in certain circumstances. And that may be beneficial, but I can't get that result without having the shareholders be taxable. So you may have taxation to your U.S. shareholders on coming in. With respect to your non-U.S. shareholders, one thing I think you need to think about is If you're in a jurisdiction where there's no withholding tax currently on distributions and you're a dividend paying company, once you have a U.S. Topco, your dividends are going to be subject to U.S. withholding tax. And once you moved into the U.S., in a number of cases, you're moving into the U.S. because you already have significant U.S. operations. So after the move into the U.S., depending how you move in, you're going to be in a circumstance where you got a U.S. Topco, then the foreign parent of what used to be the foreign multinational group, and below that, the U.S. subsidiaries. And so you got to figure out how to move the U.S. subsidiaries out from the foreign jurisdiction up into under the U.S. because it's very inefficient longer term to have a U.S. sub separated from U.S. parent by a non-U.S. company. And there's a number of ways to do that. As I've already mentioned, one of the reasons that I like to think about doing it taxably and getting basis step up is that would allow me to unwind that sandwich pretty quickly. Otherwise, you may have to wait a year or even 2 years in order to unwind the sandwich in a way that's tax efficient. And obviously, like everything else, because we're U.S. tax lawyers, we look at everything from a U.S. tax perspective, but obviously it's not just U.S. tax that's involved here. You've got a foreign corporation in the middle. And Steve, I mean, what have you seen in terms of non-U.S. considerations when we talk to our member firms about how to unwind this sandwich or even taxes of coming into the United States to the non-U.S. shareholders?
Foreign tax considerations can be just as important as the U.S. tax considerations when redomiciling a foreign parented group. Importantly, the redomiciliation itself doesn't change the location of the group's assets or its operations. Thus, if you now got a U.S. parented group, maybe it wants to inbound IP to take advantage of the FIDE regime, that historical owner of the IP will likely have to pay an exit charge for moving it out of its local jurisdiction. Now, maybe you have a situation where there's favorable tax attributes at the local level that you can utilize to offset some of that cost. But that is usually, you know, one of the largest costs when coming into these inbounding transactions and looking to restructure your operations as a U.S. multinational. You know, maybe with that said, you could maybe avoid an exit charge through some of the die-on-the-vine planning, but those strategies can take years to complete, so very less efficient than moving the IP directly. Also, once you've adopted a U.S. parented structure, you know, the historical holding company structure used by the foreign parent group may be suboptimal for the new group. So the post-inbounding restructuring may include the direct and indirect movement of foreign subsidiaries. And while a lot of foreign countries have participation exemptions for stock transfers, it's not always the case. A lot of foreign countries have non-resident capital gains taxes, indirect transfer taxes, not to mention withholding taxes if stock is distributed. Although the potential U.S. tax considerations associated with these inbounding transactions can be complex and costly, the foreign side of the restructuring should not be underestimated.
Thanks, Steve. Gordon, you mentioned potential withholding tax on foreign shareholders of the U.S. What are some other U.S. tax considerations once the group has been inbounded?
Once you've got a U.S. parent company, you've got a dramatically different tax profile. You're being subject to tax on the earnings of all the foreign subsidiaries under GILTI or subpart F. And if you're coming from a jurisdiction that's got a participation exemption on, for example, sale of stock, and you now are selling stock of a lower tier subsidiary, you may have U.S. residual tax on that sale of stock, which you wouldn't have if you hadn't come inbound. And I think that's something that people don't always focus on, but I think it's an important consideration. Another one, Gary, you and I have talked about many times, and we like to refer to as Hotel California. It's a one-way street. You come in, you're not leaving. If tomorrow some of the tax rates change, you find it's not as beneficial as you thought it was going to be, it's very, very difficult to then leave the U.S. tax system. So you're pretty sure when you're coming in. The other thing I'd mention is a lot of people have noted that because of the side-by-side system, you avoid all the costs, which can be significant, of complying with Pillar 2. That having been said, you're replacing it with the U.S. tax system of CFC reporting and other compliance that you also have to take into account. So as I said before, and say again, it's sort of like the theme of The Graduate. The future is plastic. In this case, the future is modeling. I can't emphasize enough how important it is to model what it's going to look like going forward to make sure that before you make that move, which is pretty much irreversible, that you run all the numbers.
So Steve, Gordon, before we wrap up today, do you have any final thoughts?
Look, this is very much a developing area. And where it's going to go ultimately, I don't know. I don't know if this is a case where everybody's waiting for one big mover to move and then suddenly the floodgates are going to open, whether it's more, there's a handful of companies that this is probably important to and there won't be as much as we think there might otherwise be. It's also a question of first mover advantage. At some point, If you get a flood of people coming into the United States, I can't imagine that foreign jurisdictions aren't going to think about how they prevent that from happening, whether they're going to follow the extreme complexity of the U.S. inversion rules or find out some other way to make that happen. I don't know, but I think this is very much a developing area. And as more people consider it and there's more changes as time goes on, there's going to be greater consideration and concerns by other countries as to whether or not they should be visiting side by side, how they change their own tax system to make it more favorable for people to stay home. It's going to be an interesting process, I think.
Yeah, no, Gordon, I totally agree. It's going to be an interesting time here to see how the market shakes out. Keep going back to some of the topics we discussed at the top of the podcast that, you know, this is very facts and circumstances driven. You know, it's not very tax motivated. So it's going to be a unique decision to each company, whether or not to make the move to the U.S. You know, you compare and contrast that to the U.S. inversion wave that we saw in the mid-2010s, where those were, as you noted, Gordon, mostly tax motivated. So I think there's more at stake here. And one thing I think we can all agree on is that we don't want worldwide Section 7874 popping up. So hopefully other countries will respond, if they do, with maybe some less burdensome set of rules.
Back when people were inverting out of the United States, you had a 35% tax rate in the United States and dramatically lower rates elsewhere. While the U.S. tax system has become much more competitive, it's certainly not anywhere, at least in my view, of that sort of gap that you had that drove the inversions out of the United States. So I think the real question is going to be more of a matter of people wanting to list in the United States or otherwise come to the United States for non-tax benefits, and whether then foreign countries are going to want to try and keep them from coming into the United States by having adverse tax consequences from them doing so, and time will tell.
Thank you, Steve and Gordon, for your insights into the changing conversation on inbounding to the U.S. And a special thank you to Elena Mayday for her help behind the scenes with this episode. I did want to revisit one thing that Gordon said. I prefer, rather than the Hotel California analogy, the famous quote from Bittker and Eustace with respect to corporate tax, but it can apply to U.S. tax generally, that a domestic corporation is like a lobster pot. It is easy to enter, difficult to live in, and painful to get out of. So there are a lot of considerations about the pros and cons of coming into the U.S., but they have to weigh in the possibility of law changes in the future and whether the U.S., if it is a favorable jurisdiction today, will continue to be favorable tomorrow. As always, please stay tuned for future episodes of KPMG's Inside International Tax to stay up to speed on the latest developments in U.S. international tax. Until our next episode, take care.